Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode COVID-19. I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
I'm Tim.
I'm Brandon.
And we are recording an episode. We may do more down the road, but the idea is to use this time we have and talk about the situation at hand. Yeah, life is pretty crazy right now.
It is.
It's more like it's like worse than 9/11 ever was, because we're all like forced to just stew in the situation for months on end.
It's like we're in a war.
Yeah. We wanted to see and discuss how this is going to affect the world of movies and TV going forward. So we're going to start kind of like a linear timeline, and as we reach further out into the future, we're going to start talking about different aspects of the film world and how this will be affected by that. I wanted to kind of talk about this news piece. Tim, did you hear about the South by Southwest Amazon Prime partnership?
No, not officially.
So this is the very first topic we wanted to discuss, because what it is, it's the South by Southwest, as we know, was canceled. The festival was canceled. And all these people who signed up got their film submitted and accepted into the program. And we're super excited to have their stuff shown to thousands of people. It's gone. Like their chance to get that initial audience after, you know, how many years of working on their projects, it's over. So, but the South by Southwest partnered with Amazon Prime to very soon showcase the films that were supposed to air there for free to everyone.
Wow.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that's fantastic. I think it's going to be an interesting way to see, like, this is definitely a good way to start this sort of a streaming thing, just because, like, they want those films to be shown. They want people to see it. And I just don't know how many people would purchase a pass or like a ticket, you know, kind of similar modeling to that like festival kind of model. I don't think people would actually buy a ticket right now. So to start off this kind of a weird time with like canceling all these festivals to like have it available for free online, I think is a very good move for sure. Because if it's, I don't know, like, did it say if they're gonna be on like indefinitely, like for the entirety of the movie, or is it like just a brief window that they're gonna be streaming these movies?
I think it's a window.
Yeah, they didn't say, they said they'd come back and kind of give us an update once they announce the official, because there's a selection of films.
Well, the filmmakers sign up.
There's only 10 total?
I believe so.
Okay.
Oh. It says, hold on, let me look at this thing. It says, we'll stream on, yeah, it doesn't say necessarily like all of them or anything, but regardless, I think like at least all the big ticket items, so, you know, all the ones with, like the ones that were going to hit theaters anyways, to give people a little taste of like, this is, these are some movies that were going to be at South by Southwest. You guys can watch them now. We're going to take them away, but eventually we'll put it back on if you guys purchase, blah, blah, blah. I think that's a great way to at least give people some levity in this situation. I think what's been so helpful with even how Disney Plus has been putting, like how they put Onward, which is barely a month, you know, in its theater run on Disney Plus, where people who have subscriptions or can get a trial can watch it for free. I think that's actually like, I think it's a really good way to get people more invested in some of these newer content that's coming out, and have something to look forward to. So I don't know. It's inventive. It's a new thing. I'm excited about it, because I was very bummed to hear that South by Southwest got canceled. So I think for people who are in the film industry, who, or even people who aren't, but just love following the festival circuit films and all that stuff, I think it's going to be a really exciting way to be able to kind of nationally, actually, because no one's going to be there, nationally see these films and be able to talk about them and have a chance for people who normally would not have an opportunity to go to South by Southwest actually like watch it and feel like they're part of it.
What I was thinking was maybe it won't be the bigger films like King of Staten Island or something. I can't imagine they would put that up there because they want a theatrical run, and they want, like, the things that already have distributors, I don't think would be up. I think it'd be the things that are smaller, that need a bigger audience, that, you know, maybe they're still selling their movie. I don't know if that would get in the way of the distributor, but if it's only up for like 10 days or something, then they could say, okay, we'll buy your movie and distribute it from now on, or something like that. And even like the shorts and stuff, I think that would be a really good market for new filmmakers to showcase their work.
Yeah, it wasn't 10 days, it was 10 films.
10 films, okay.
And those 10 films, I believe, are going to be offered. The filmmakers are going to be offered an invitation to opt into this program to show their movie on Amazon Prime for 10 days, which is likely going to be the
The post that I'm looking at right now says that the movies will stream on Amazon Prime for 10 days, and they don't have a release date yet. And I'm trying to see if they have any movies that are slated.
I think everyone's still signing up, because I know the signups just started this week or something.
Gotcha. But yeah, that it's going to be an online fest, I guess. Yeah.
Well, maybe Venice and Tribeca will like follow in the footsteps of them this year if they get canceled and have to, you know, do their festival digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Netflix will get in the game with competing with Amazon for this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I feel like Tribeca definitely would do that, and they probably should, given the kind of festival it is. So I don't know. It is exciting in a way that, like, we get to... It's something, again, that we get to look forward to, because right now every day seems like I keep losing track of what day it is. Like, tomorrow is actually my birthday, and I was like, wow, that's tomorrow? Like, I had no idea.
Oh, my God. Happy birthday.
Right? Thank you. But it's like every day is just blending into another. So without something to look forward to, it's been, you know, it's been a weird time.
So the fun thing about this is that, yeah, there may be some films that may not be a part of this opportunity because of their potential distribution deals. Maybe there are bigger companies that are, you know, for financing or whatever have you. But think about the people who have their film in South by Southwest, and they're very new in the industry, and now they have the entire country who has all the time in the world to watch their film. And it could bring them more opportunities this way. It could be like a silver lining in this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll be fascinating to see the, dare I say it, the COVID-19 like filmmaker boomers who somehow, because of how this works out and the timing, everyone's going to know who they are because everyone was watching stuff online. Just because you make it into a festival like this does not guarantee that you get to have a lot of people see your films. And this is, one of those like perfect situations where the people who are big film people are going to be watching most of these films since they have the time. So I think there are going to be a lot of like newcomers that kind of come out of this situation, which I think is, again, like it's so weird that something so grim is bringing up like potential exciting things.
Yeah, not to mention the amount of coronavirus themed movies we'll be getting over the next couple of years.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I mean, a resurgence of zombie movies or pandemic movies, that's gonna be fascinating to see.
Or even like, you know, meet Greg. He was down and out on his romantic relationships, and all of a sudden now he's in this, or, you know, it's like romantic comedies based off of this COVID-19, people locked up in like this, like Romeo and Juliet. They can't see each other, but they can talk through like messaging.
Like a Love is Blind kind of a thing.
Yeah, Love is Blind, I guess.
How long do you think the grace period will be, typically after any sort of disaster or natural event?
But yeah, the grace period with this, I think, because even comedians now are not really joking like on late night about it that much. I don't know, maybe a couple months after, I think people will start really joking about it. I think it depends how bad it gets, though, you know?
I mean, right now, I'm seeing so many Twitter memes and jokes already. And, like, I think there are definitely some people who are, like, because I think it's not a situation where there seems like something kind of different in terms of how comedians and people who are, like, turning this into a cultural thing, have responded to things like big tragedies and then a pandemic that we're all a part of. Because I think like with some of those tragedies, yes, everyone's affected, but not everybody is directly affected. But this affects every single person right now. Like everyone everywhere has to live through this. And I think because we're all a part of it, some people just have a lot more like freedom to make fun of this entire situation because we all know how serious it is. But also, it's so ridiculous and it's happening to everybody. So I've seen a huge amount of like, especially on Twitter, the amount of memes and the amount of jokes people are making. And like people feel okay kind of laughing along with it because it's not irreverent. Because a lot of the things that people are joking about are like, what you do in quarantine, you know, it's not necessarily about the people dying, but it's about what we do in quarantine. So I think there's been a different kind of like joke culture that's come out of this, but while people are still taking, hopefully like a lot of people are still being stupid, but like a lot of people are really taking this very seriously. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that big difference of like making fun of something that they're not close to, as opposed to something that we're all going through together. And that somehow makes it a little bit better when we're joking about certain things. That's my thought, but
yeah, that's true. No, I didn't really. I never thought of it like that. We really are all going through this. So, well, I went to this program for people with disabilities in entertainment, and one of the women there directed a short for South by Southwest, and she was super bummed that they got canceled and it seemed like it was never going to be seen. So we saw a clip of it and she got a woman with no arm and she was in a grocery store and people kept offering her help and she kept saying no. And then it was revealed later that she didn't have an arm and it was really funny. It was like a dark comedy. And so I'm sure she's really happy and it's really great that that kind of film will reach a wider audience now because of it.
But is she a part of that service?
Part of a service.
I think any filmmaker can opt in to pretty much Amazon Prime's like, here's an invitation. If you want us to show it, we'll show it. But I doubt the larger films, Green Knight, King of Staten Island, Bad Trip, those movies likely aren't going to.
Yeah, but that's the very immediate. I wanted to kind of talk about the other part of the immediacy of it all is the impact on the productions that were in production. Obviously, ones we've heard about, like Marvel had to stop their productions. Some shows like The Flash and those CW shows had to stop a couple episodes short. Don't know. Again, this is all based on how long this is going to go on. How much longer before they cut their losses and just move on? Or do they think that they're going to come back to their productions and finish them? Obviously, the films will.
I think the films in time will, because I know they're like Uncharted was supposed to be filming right now, and then he's supposed to film Spider-Man in July. So scheduling issues might, you know, with Mark Wahlberg and everything else, they might have to come back later than they thought they would to finish. But I think for films, it might take a while longer for them to finish everything just because of scheduling issues than TV.
The good thing is the lapse in production shouldn't affect movies in theaters because of all these delays. All these movies we're missing right now will just be spread out throughout the year and next year. So I don't think we'll actually have any time once theaters are back up and running that there'll be a drought of films. It'll just be strange, I think, for streaming services who are not necessarily taking a hiatus from premiering films. I think eventually they'll run into a point where we either have to buy a shit ton of movies that have already been made, already filmed, because otherwise there's been this gap for them who are creating original content that I don't know how quickly they can bounce back from once everything's leveled out, the playing fields, you know, we're all back to normal anyway.
Yeah, I think I agree with that because Mulan just announced their tentative delayed opening in the summer, which I think is great because it was going to be a March release and now it's going to be a summer release, you know? And I think this is just kind of the thing with all entertainment things in general, not just movies, but like theme parks and other entertainment venues in general. It's either going to have a huge resurgence or just a very small splash after. Because depending on like what people are scared to do still, I think people are either going to be like, well, now this is over. We get to just go back and do everything we wanted to. or people might get scared off and not do any of those things. So it's like, I feel like it could go one or the other way. I think this could potentially be a really good opportunity for movie theaters, because I think since it's kind of in that in-between where it's not a huge gathering of people, that it's not going to be something that are going to scare people away. So I'm excited to see like all the ones like Mulan and Black Widow and things that did have to push their release date back to actually like come back and make a big return, you know?
Mm-hmm.
TV shows, I think, will be very interesting because, yeah, they do have more of that. Like, they have to have a schedule with everything. So I do wonder how that's going to affect everything.
Plus, you have seasons that never finished. So,
yeah,
like, let's say they have 4 episodes left. How are you going to rectify the story? Or will they have to extend production past what their normal end date would be and shoot everything? You know, it could be like... have 2 of 4 episodes could be a month and a half, 2 months even.
And then you might have issues like somebody grew a mustache like Henry Cavill for another role and you gotta CGI that out.
They just let themselves go in quarantine mode. We're all there.
I do wonder, like, is there a possibility that this might shake up the season scheduling? Like, if there's going to be a pilot season at the same time, or if that might be shifted around just because of how this is kind of changed.
I also wonder if theaters are going to start implementing the same precautions they were when this first started. Maybe they'll start at like 50% capacity. Perhaps they'll do what China did by releasing, you know, older films back into theaters, giving them re-releases just to get folks back into the theaters. Because, yeah, people are probably going to be still kind of freaked out by the time they call this all off. And I don't know if a lot of people are going to want to rush out. I do believe that once you get that month or two out after we're all kind of performing our normal day-to-day routines, I think then you're going to see a huge goddamn boom in theatrical box office. I think it's going to be huge.
And I know Tenet is the first one, like mid-July, the first new movie that's going to hit after
Yeah, if we're out of this.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say by July, yeah.
So everything in June's been pushed back?
Not officially. Camp Staten Island is still in June, but I mean, they'll probably push it.
Right. Because they did move Candyman.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, all these have been moved, yeah.
Yeah, there's still a few left, but I can't imagine them coming out.
And let's say it ends end of April, end of May, and June is unaffected. Those movies that are still there are going to make a lot more money than they ever would have. Like King of Staten Island... You know, Candyman makes sense because it's more of like a box office hit, I guess.
Well, because Disney also announced the first film to technically forego its theatrical release is Artemis Fowl. That one's going straight to Disney Plus. Yeah. Because I know Trolls World Tour comes out here in like a week or two as of recording. But that one will still get, I think there are still a couple of theaters, weirdly enough, open nationwide that they said that it would get technically a theatrical and VOD release day and date. But... when you're only
we'll see when that happens.
Theaters that are still showing this.
Yeah.
I also understand drive-ins have come back too, so they're actually showing movies outside and in a safe space.
So I think that like Trolls 2, I think this is actually like a great example of a if they strategize this right, because if they decide to do it kind of like some of these other Amazon theater releases where they're like you can early access purchase the entire movie with one-time purchase. If NBC/Universal decided to make this early, like on-demand thing, a 48 hour like rental, and so you'd have to repurchase that. How many parents right now are trying to get their kids to watch something and just to leave them alone? Like and it's a new movie and people loved Trolls. So like if they're able to do that at like, let's say it's like a $10 or $15 rental for 48 hours. Imagine the amount of times that they're going to be re-renting that just because their kids are like, we want to watch it. Like, I think that's a kind great... of
sick, yeah.
Yeah, and if also, they did that.
I know theater chains are not happy with Universal right now because of the... they put it on VOD and they're like, why not just delay it so we can get business later? And so Universal's kind of the black sheep, I guess is that?
I guess you could call them that, yeah, because what, they released Invisible Man, The Hunt, all their stuff on VOD early. I think it's at now a premium price. You're spending $20, but a family of four, you know, you have four kids going to the theaters, how much that movie would cost you? Almost $100 out to see fucking Trolls World Tour. You know, the benefit of watching it at home, pausing it when your kids spill shit all over your couch, you know. But then looking at it from your perspective, Tim, yeah, that's a horrific idea of, like, I want to watch Trolls Tour again. I'm not going to stop crying till I do.
Well, at that point, you just buy it, hopefully.
But that's the thing. I don't think you can buy these movies. You can't buy Invisible Man right now. You can't buy
The Hunt. Can.
These are all still premium rental prices for 48 hours. No,
they said buy. Those
say you can buy them. Really?
Yeah, if you look it on Amazon Prime, those are all buy for $20. So
that's a good deal. Damn.
I haven't it was done only a 48 it yet.
48-hour
so.
Rental for $20.
That's what I thought. Still, for a brand new
movie in theaters, is terrible, I suppose.
Yeah. But, you know, like, I understand that theaters are unhappy with that. But at the same time, like, right now, this is a very unique time where you kind of have to see what's going to happen. Like, I think it is, I mean, like I said earlier, like, it is a possibility that people are going to rush to the theaters after this is all over. But there are, I feel like there are going to be a lot of people who are not going to. So the gamble of having people go back to some of these places after this sort of a pandemic is, it's a gamble, because we're talking, like, since I work at Universal of the Park, we actually have no idea how busy our year is going to be. The entire 2020 year, people are anticipating them not being able to open up till Halloween.
Wow.
So, like, it's no one knows right now. I think it's because, like, if business doesn't do well after we're able to clear this shit up, we don't know where the parks are going to go. I mean, did you guys see the announcement that Disney just furloughed all their non-union employees?
No, I didn't see that.
Which is most of the park. There are some union positions, but most of them are non-union. They just furloughed everybody.
That's so crazy. Their jobs are technically the new Marvel Land opening.
Yeah, I mean, the performers are all union, but the operations, I don't know. Because I have a couple friends who work there who are not union, and they are currently, they're saying, you know, they're going to hire them back after this is all done, but they're not technically an active employee, where, you know, I am fortunately a union member, so I do have a job technically, for better or for worse, because I'm not getting paid much. But, you know, like, it's going to be a gamble to see what happens to the entertainment industry after this.
I think the parks are more at risk than theaters, because there's more points of contact with rides, like people touching the same surfaces versus a theater. Yeah, you may touch the armrest, but if you bring your own cup, you're not going to touch that same cup later.
Yeah. But, and like, even if they decide to say, we're only going to sell every other seat, you know, we're not going to sell seats next to each other, and like, kind of literally just that 50% capacity where all the seats around you are going to be empty, like front and behind, and then it's just going to be, you know, like, there are ways to change that, but then that also does, you know, affect the amount of people they're able to take in every day.
Right.
Yeah, they, so a full packed house is going to be, you know, the revenue is going to be cut in half.
Yeah, they probably will have to do that 50% capacity at first, because I know China opened theaters and then closed them again. So to make sure that doesn't happen here, they'll probably do that.
Yeah, so I wonder what movie studios are going to essentially sacrifice to, you know, being box office duds, or if they might put the films that, you know, The Invisible Man, The Hunt, onward, if they put those, re-release those back into the theaters, or if they, do the China route, put Avatar back into the theaters,
Harry Dark Potter. Knight,
Harry Potter, any of these, like, big franchise staples that people are comfortable with seeing on the big screen. I feel like that might be the safest bet, just to maybe coax people out who aren't as freaked out as others, but without, you know, ruining the chances of some of these films' box office potential.
Let's put Spice World back out there.
Ooh,
oh man,
day one.
It's my favorite,
dude. If they re-released all three Resident Evil movies, like, listen, I would go.
Wait, there's like seven of them.
I know, but I like the first three.
So just for Tim, let's put the first three of them out.
Well, so what films have been delayed either indefinitely or ones that have switched spots?
So Mulan definitely pushed back. They were supposed to be out already. They pushed back till, I think, June or July. Black Widow also was pushed back indefinitely. I don't know exactly when they're going to be releasing.
They set that, right, for November now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's November 4th.
Is it set for November?
November
6th. Yeah, because they had to shuffle the entire Marvel slate.
Yeah, everything's just back one. Now, the shows are still unconfirmed. As of now, they're the same release dates.
Which is crazy that they just shuffled every single release. It goes to show what, you know, the confidence they have in all their titles to be like, it doesn't really matter when this one comes out in relation to the calendar year. We know they're all going to be successes, so.
Yeah, and plus, Wonder Woman is in August.
Well, plus they put so much money behind these films that they can't really just do a Disney Plus release.
No. Plus, you want to see it on the big screen. You don't want to see it on your TV.
And you can tell the marketing engine, because they could easily added a new release date in August for Black Widow and kept everything the same. But it's like they need a certain amount of months to get into the cycle to maximize profits.
Well, I also think it gave them room because they needed to delay Shang-Chi and all that kind of stuff. So it gave them room to push everything back and do all the visual effects, and so everything's still on schedule.
Look at it this way. This year, we'll have one Marvel film. Next year, we'll have four.
Wow. Four?
Yep. We'll have February, May, July, if Spider-Man holds, and November.
Oh, that's true.
Woof.
Yeah. Wow. And then I think it'll be four from that point on.
Yeah, so then September is... Everything is packed now, the last 6 months. Because September is Quiet Place 2, The Conjuring 3 the week after, The King's Man the week after, and then Candyman the week after that.
A lot of horror.
Shit.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Goddamn. That's how it should be.
It'd be better than last year. Last year was terrible for horror films in the fall, so...
Guys, I'm going to be in school right around then if this all goes away, so I'm like... I'm not going to have time to go watch these movies.
Well, you're going to have to make time.
I'm going to have to, but like, oh God, it's going to be difficult. I'm very unfamiliar with the TV world in terms of like how the scheduling works. And I know, Jamie, you've worked a lot more in TV. Like how has this affected what you've seen in terms of like where things are going and like how the day-to-day operations have changed? And
well, I mean... Things were rocky before this happened because there was that fear of the Writers Guild strike. I don't know what's happening with that. They've been very quiet since the COVID-19 pandemic started. I don't know if they're going to request the same demands at this time. Maybe they'll wait till the next time they renegotiate. Because we were already, in general... There was talks of like shorter episode orders, not from my end, but I've heard rumors of different shows, and that still may hold. We just don't know yet. Everything's up in the air. Everything's on hold until we figure it out.
Yeah, I have a lot of people who work, a lot of friends who work on set, and yeah, most of them are just kind of like, well, we're just waiting.
So what do you guys think will happen for the smaller chain theaters or the independent theaters, the ones that don't have corporate money behind them, or, you know, like Lemley's been doing like a streaming service similar where they have like this program you can rent online for like $12, really? Like a ticket price to watch a movie.
What?
But some people don't have that. Like some theaters back home in Maine, they're just one theater. They may get a small business loan or to cover... from the whole stimulus package, but we don't know. If we close like 25% of theaters, that'll kill box office right there.
Mm.
Or they're going to reopen a month later.
Well, yeah, a lot of these art house theaters have already sadly had to close their doors. A few of them have announced that they just won't be able to recover from this, even with a small business loan, because they're already, it's like, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, essentially, for some of these smaller owned family theaters and whatnot. Which is super sad, because it goes to show what movies will be available on a big screen, and they're likely going to be the big studio films, because it's typically the art house theaters that show these weirder independent stuff that your AMC, your, you know, your big name flagship cinemas, your big chains aren't going to show. And so if those shutter, you know, we've got a big fucking corporate landscape of films, you know, the big box stuff.
Yeah, I think it's the same story with a lot of small businesses, with bars and all that kind of stuff. I think a lot of them are, if it goes on another month, a lot of them will just have to close their doors.
I think what might come of the independent scene and the smaller theaters, if they choose to go still stick with the art house films, I think it might be an interesting idea for them to continue on with some of these streaming services for some revenue, and the kind of shifting their focus into that direction, and also using that to be able to have one theater open, like with one screen. Like just that thing with the Lemley, like I just looked it up just now, like to be able to see that they're still able to stream and have a rental and kind of still treat that as a theater going experience, but just at home. I think they might have to kind of embrace that model for a little bit. And I think that might be the only way they can actually keep things open. Because it's going to take a huge hit, because the only films that people are really going to want to go see in theaters after this, I feel like, are going to be the big blockbusters. I hope that's not the case, because I love going to see art house independent films. And like, that was always a source of so much life for me.
I fear what that means for theaters. Like,
yeah,
people are going to start demanding home releases and mm-hmm. or preferring that. Like, the proof is in the pudding. If I mean, and again, that number is skewed because so many people are home and have the time to kill right now. But if the numbers prove really well, some studios may release their films exclusively online and then just further add to the death of theaters. And I don't mm-hmm. want that to happen.
Yeah, I really don't want that to happen either. I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons why when, like, I was at Sundance the year that Manchester by the Sea and Birth of a Nation and all those films were purchased by Netflix and Amazon. And Tallulah, which was a movie with, what's her name? Ellen Page. I really wanted to see it, and I still haven't seen it. It's on Netflix, and I still haven't seen it because I missed it. You know, it came out on Netflix, and I'm like, I didn't see anything about it because it was an online premiere. And it really rubbed me the wrong way when it first started, and I still really don't want that to be the trend. But, like, the more people I talk to, that's, like, what people want now, which is very sad for me because I, like, the theater going experience has been such a huge part of how I love spending my free time and the way I love to consume movies. That's like the prime way for me to watch a movie is in the theater. And I think that with smaller movie theaters, for a little while, they might not do well. I do hope that possibly the drive-in theaters come back and make that a way that people still want to go see a movie instead of watching it at home, and it gets people out there. And I think once you kind of get into that, people might start to shift back into just going into a movie theater. I feel like it's been interesting to see that, like, the way people consume movies was already at a weird point where people weren't wanting to go see a movie in theaters and they only wanted to see it at home, and now that that's all that we're allowed to do, I feel like something's forcing people to change the way of, like, seeing movies. And even for the big companies to think about what it means to have a theatrical release.
But the longstanding isolation might make people want to go out again and experience that experience. And I hope that's the case. I mean, you have AMC A-List, for example, which will keep people who have, you know, three movies a week for the certain price will have the ability to go see in more independent films because they have those three movies. Congestion in the release schedule notwithstanding. But
yeah,
I just wonder if the smaller chains are going to have a hard time if people, like, well, I'd rather just see this small film when it comes out on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. It's like,
Yeah, I don't know how sustainable that business model would be for these smaller theater chains only offering to stream their content, because most of their money comes from concessions and things that you get right at the theater. So, I mean, I don't even know how the... I'm genuinely curious how this breakdown, how much the studio, what their share is in this movie that the Lemley or all these other smaller theaters are offering to show on a streaming service. But I can understand studios being more inclined to just release them to streaming services, I suppose. Cut out the middleman, which is sad.
I think especially this year, because I know A24 has a deal with Apple anyway. But then also, like you said, the congestion this year. At the end of the year is usually award movies, but the end of this year is going to be like summer. So I think you're going to have Black Widow, No Time to Die, Godzilla vs. Kong, and then the award movies, and people are going to want to lean towards the blockbusters maybe a little bit more. So maybe some of the smaller ones, even for the Academy, put it limited and then just throw it up on streaming or something like that.
It's going to be a weird Oscar season.
Yeah.
That was another thing I was going to talk about. The award season. What do you guys feel is going to happen? So let's say this ends in May or June, and things start coming back around in June, July. Do you feel that the award, either the window will be extended for eligibility, or do you feel that these films are going to have just simply less competition when it comes to nominations?
What do you mean less competition?
There are less films out over the year.
Oh, I see.
There's a possibility that they might change the criteria of what qualifies then. Because if they're forcing some of these smaller award-type films to be only a streaming release, they may... Because there were a couple movies that people were upset didn't get nominated, and they're like, it just didn't qualify. I forget which movie was the big example last year.
For which award?
For the Best Picture Award.
Oh.
Because there are certain things that you have to be able to have some kind of theatrical release to be able to be eligible for Best Picture. And so I don't know if they're going to change those qualifications or
maybe kind of modify that a little bit. This year, since there's even if the theaters cut it down by 50%, it might be less theaters playing, you know, if they have Black Widow, they're going to have more theaters playing that to have more people in the movie, which means less room for other movies. So I think maybe they just say this year we'll change the qualifications for it, but I don't know if it would be for the future forever.
Yeah, I don't think they'll change anything, because if you look at most awards seasons, it's like 90% of the movies come out after October anyway.
Sure.
What I fear might happen is the mid-budget films might wind up moving to next year, these mid-budget Oscar contenders, because I feel like a lot of the smaller films are just going to be like, you know what, this probably isn't going to affect our chances anyway. We were always going to make this certain amount of money. But I feel like a movie for like Ford v. Ferrari last year, Knives Out maybe, yeah, these maybe crowd pleasers might feel like they're now just too much competition with these blockbusters that they might not compete or get the money they were expecting. So maybe they'll bump to next year, next spring or something like that, when they could have had maybe some Oscar potential.
But then to your point, I would rather have these films come out at the end of the year to be in that consideration. Because if in their beginning of the year, next year, they're not going to have much of a shot. But because there's so few films, like a lot of these blockbusters already have jumped to 2021, either in the spring or summer, like completely, like what was it, Universal, Fast Nines, like fuck it, next April.
Yeah.
So there may be more films to compete with in terms of like, you know, in Quiet Place and Candyman, but these other films like Wes Anderson's film that got delayed till October, it's the perfect time for him. It's perfect.
Comes out the same day as Halloween Kills.
What a double feature.
Which is a different audience, but still.
Exactly. It'll just be fascinating to see Martin Lawrence win Best Actor for Bad Boys for Life come Oscar season, because he's got no competition.
It's going to be a wild ride, because I think, everything's kind of being forced to look at in a different way. Like, they have to see, like, this is what we used to do, but given this incredible circumstance, like, what do you do? Like, how do you respond to it? And what do you change? What do you not? And if that means, like, maybe even, changing the deadlines a little bit or whatever that is. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do.
Because what I don't think they will do is change the requirements. Because if the Motion Picture Academy changes that for 1 year, it'll become a precedent. And then these streaming services, which they're already fighting against, the production companies, the studios are fighting against streaming services anyway.
In theaters,
right. And to have that theater run to be a part of the consideration, they wouldn't let that go because they would never be able to hold on to that again. Like, once you break that rule, it's easier to overlook the next time. People will petition, audiences might petition, and that just might ruin the whole thing and further kill theaters. I think they're going to hold fast, hopefully, to keep theaters going, especially after this crazy time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super curious about how those mid-budget films that have already set their dates for December and whatnot, if they'll be strong-armed to move by these bigger movies that are coming in, like West Side Story and the Death of the Nile, I think, was supposed to come out in October. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if these movies, once they start to see the big juggernaut movies, say, you know what, we're going to take this spot, because at that point they're probably figuring we're going to make the money regardless. I wonder if they'll move.
It's possible.
Yeah, like Top Gun 2 moved to December, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Free Guy moved, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Free Guy, yeah. Did Dune move?
Dune was always there.
Okay.
But No Time to Die, that's November now.
Right.
So the only thing that changed here was Top Gun.
Okay.
And Free Guy.
Wow. That is busy December.
But then there's all these movies down here that have no release dates at this time, right?
Yeah, like New Mutants. I hope they don't throw that on streaming. Because I've been waiting 3 years to see that in theaters. And if Disney's just like, oh, we're going to put it on Hulu, I'm going to be like, no. Like, that's one I want in theaters.
Well, they would have done it by now, right?
I mean, who knows, man. Might just be sitting on Bob Iger's shelf in his office. He's like, oh, I forgot it. And it's just like, you know.
He's spitting on it right now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was supposed to come around my birthday time. Yeah. And I was like, that's going to be the movie I go see on, like, my birthday with people.
Yeah, but, like, it's movies like that that aren't, like, blockbusters, but they're not really indie films either. That I think could be in danger of being thrown on streaming, where it's like, no, I want to see this in theaters, and I will pay to see this in theaters if you put it up there. They got lucky. Some of these movies, like Bob's Burgers, they hadn't even started marketing yet when they got pushed back, so they saved a lot of money. But I know, like, Mulan and Black Widow and Jungle Cruise and things like that, they're losing a lot of money because they've already spent so much on marketing. Which, I mean, it's Disney, which, so it's fine. But, you know, the smaller companies, like MGM, which closed all their hotels and they're already in so much trouble, they're really in trouble of just going bankrupt because they've already spent so much marketing on, you know, No Time to Die and things like that.
The real question is, when is My Spy coming out?
Ooh, Dave Bautista?
Yeah.
That pacifier, oh my God.
Rip-off one?
Pretty much.
I've been waiting with bated breath. That was supposed to come out last year. Then they pushed it to March of this year.
Right? Yep.
Whew. Yep, and will it kill it?
Fingers crossed it doesn't. Same with that, Woman in the Window movie that was supposed to come out last year, year before, or something like that. Now that's pushed as well. I'm really hoping
that's the movies one with Amy like Adams,
King of
right?
Staten Island, Promising Young Woman, these get actual theatrical releases despite them being, you know, kind of tailor-made for a streaming audience. I really hope they just don't dump them there. Because again, as you were saying, Tim, this movie you really wanted to see when it was at Sundance or whatever film festival you were at, it got on Netflix. Super convenient to watch at any moment, but it just gets lost in the shuffle because there's so much shit on there. It loses the significance, the importance of it when it's just another poster on this goddamn streaming service.
And there's the one from last year I've been waiting for, the Riz Ahmed as the drummer who's going deaf.
Oh, yeah,
that's still not out.
Lightning. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is fascinating to see why they decided to go in those directions where, like, Netflix and Amazon are like, we're going to just buy them to put them on streaming, because I don't know. Yeah, I just don't know anybody who's seen a lot of these movies where if they were in theaters, they probably would have been watched.
Yeah, Antlers. Yeah. Like, does Disney really care about Antlers? Are they just going to throw it up on Hulu? I hope not.
It's just sad, the marketing timeline. Like, June to me based on what our current timelines are, feels safe, but they can't guarantee that based on marketing and spend all this millions of dollars on marketing only to find out that June's still not good, which sucks. And again, we're going to have this like vacancy filled by bigger films, and just, which I would go see, honestly, just to get in the house and go to the theaters again.
Oh, exactly.
Let's watch the whole Infinity Saga again. I don't give a damn.
I mean, we had tickets to Rosemary's Baby like 2 weeks ago on Friday, and the movies were being pulled, and we were like, oh, we still got Rosemary's Baby, and then the theaters closed, and it was like, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, any other thoughts on this whole situation?
Well, what about things that are benefiting, like Tiger King, and, you know, these things that are being put out on streaming that might be getting a bigger audience now than they would normally?
I think Netflix, Amazon, Hulu are kind of killing it with these series. What I'm always disappointed in seems to be a lot of these original features. That's not all the case. We watched, what was it, Big Time Adolescence on Hulu, which was a pretty fun one. I don't know if that one necessarily was shot as an original Hulu movie or if it was shot and Hulu picked it up, which seems to be the case. Those are the movies I seem to enjoy more when they're a movie that premieres at a Sundance or a film festival of some sorts, and Netflix or one of these companies swoops in. Most of their original content, though, is what keeps me going to theaters because it's just not as good. Like a big tentpole Netflix movie, like Six Underground or something like that, just isn't as appealing to me as what, you know, these big budget ones that go to theaters.
And what's crazy to me is, like, how do they not market Big Time Adolescence more? I haven't seen anything for it. Everyone's home. Everyone could watch it, but I haven't seen really much advertisement for it.
That's their biggest letdown there, is just the fact that they don't market their properties properly. I never know anything when it comes out. There's no anticipation for these movies typically, unless it's The Irishman, you know what I mean?
The Ed Helms one just premiered. I haven't seen any advertisements for that except on Netflix.
Coffee and Kareem.
Oh, but God. Along with your thing, Alex, I think I know this isn't a movie, but Animal Crossing is probably would not have done this well if it did not come out this time. Because who wants to build an island and, you know, have your friends over on your island while you grow cherries, pears,
and
peaches,
and escape from the reality around you?
Yeah, like when, like, this is the perfect time for them to have done this, and it just kind of fortunately was, like, they decided to release it right around the time that they're shutting down all the stores.
Yeah, it timed out. I mean, they already shipped a bunch of copies to stores, and then obviously digital sales. Yes. It's like if Second Life or The Sims came out, it's the same vibe. Like, you just escape from your life and live this other fantasy life while this craziness is going on outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen this many people be posting their PlayStation username or their, you know, Nintendo username and be like, hey, contact me on here. And I'm like, what? It's weird.
Like, Switch is sold out. This Ring Fit Adventure game, this exercise game, sold out like hotcakes. No one can get it right now because everybody's just like, I need to keep entertained and or active something.
I do also think that one of the things that we touched on earlier, like the kind of content that's going to come out after this, so like pandemic or COVID-19 kind of related content. Mm-hmm. What I would love to see come out of this is a little bit more of a deep dive on our healthcare system, and not just healthcare, but like pharmaceuticals and how this is, why it got this bad in like worldwide, because this is a worldwide problem. It's not just a country by country basis. But I think, like, I would like to see, even if it was like sci-fi writers, kind of deal with some more of like the hard science, kind of like The Arrival, how we respond in these situations, very much like Contagion. Yeah. I would love to see more of that kind of content where people kind of really talk about, like, no one ever suspected, like, I don't think I've ever seen any pandemic movie and then be like, we're out of goddamn masks and gloves. Like, we don't have masks and gloves. Like, how toilet paper and paper towels, like, really? And so I think it'll be an interesting way to show, like, the tropes of some of these post-apocalyptic or pandemic-based movies, like, what's gonna be the new staple from this.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, there are all these stats now, like, domestic violence is up and, you know, weird things that you didn't think would happen during a pandemic.
I'm eagerly anticipating the Hulu Netflix dueling documentary series about this entire yeah. ordeal.
One will be called COVID-19.
Yeah, exactly.
Because yeah, they had those Fire Fest documentaries. Fire Fest. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the docs about the handling of it, the timeline of it, the worldwide spread of it. There's going to be so many different things we look into in the entertainment viewpoint, but also obviously, hopefully, we adjust how we approach these things going forward, because a lot of things were just mishandled or ignored until it was like too late.
Yeah, this will be a juicy segment in the Trump presidential biopic movie we get in a couple of years.
Oh yeah.
One company I do think is being very smart. Did you guys see that HBO is having a bunch of their, I think it's 500 hours of content for free right now?
Yeah.
And HBO Now launches in May. So it's like marketing for their new, you know, streaming service. And then when it launches, be like, oh, if you like this.
Actually,
yeah. There you go.
Wait, Peacock is also supposed to start in April, right?
I think last time I looked, I think it said July. But yeah, okay. I feel like they should have fast-tracked all of this. Even if you have only half your content, people are just sitting at home. Just launch it, you know, put The Office up, or I guess The Office is on Netflix right now, but Friends is on HBO Now. Launch it now when everyone's home.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder which streaming services will like stand tall and survive given this pandemic. Like if Peacock came out early, yeah, it might have a chance to actually stick around. They have a lot of content, old stuff, you know, whether or not the new stuff has any kind of staying power is to be determined.
Oh yeah.
I wonder if there'll be a tipping point after this, because you've had all these people at home actually perusing the endless hours of these libraries that they have to offer, watching everything that would appeal to them, and then at some point, once this gets back up and running, they're going to be like, you know what, I've seen everything I want to see on Netflix, and I don't want to spend the $12 it is to keep this service anymore. Maybe I'll just stick with this one. Or it'll be interesting to see how much content is pumped out immediately following, you know, normality once it kind of takes place again.
And I think Disney Plus is doing it right, because they're, you know, putting out Onward early and Frozen 2 early, and because they lost a lot of subscribers after Mandalorian ended, so now they're all kind of coming back a little bit.
I think Disney Plus will be the one that suffers the most, because because they don't have enough new stuff coming out, and once the few films they put out from theaters early are done, like, you have no new series coming out. There's been nothing announced except for the Marvel stuff, and even that's up in the air in terms of release schedule. So, like, what's left?
Yeah.
I think if they dig back into some of their archival movies and start bringing out a lot of the nostalgia and play on the nostalgia, because there's not everything that they've released, right? Like, a lot of the classics, they still kind of are, they're, like, still withholding some of those things.
But some of it might be contractual, like, it's still on Netflix for a certain amount of months or whatever, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tied up in licensing. From what I understand, though, it's like half of American families with children have Disney Plus at this moment, which is insane, even at only $6 a pop. But I think you have the cultural cachet of Disney, and it'll just be their entire library that families will hang on to if they have young enough children anyway. Yeah, but adults, you know, the people who did get Disney Plus for the nostalgia and The Mandalorian, I feel like, yeah, there's not going to be much to keep them around unless they start pumping out content that's going to appeal to them specifically. Which is why they got season 2 in production soon, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Especially because I know a lot of the subscribers got that free year with Verizon, like you and me, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
So once that year runs out, like, if Mandalorian isn't up there, if Falcon and the Winter Soldier isn't up there, I don't know, I might just wait to renew.
Maybe to wrap up, do you want to just kind of talk about anything you enjoyed watching, Tim? Did you have anything you really enjoyed over this quarantine that you've checked out that maybe you wouldn't have normally, or something you've caught up on?
I binged watched Tiger King. Yes. Definitely something I did. I've also been watching, I need more ways to watch it just because I only have a certain amount of seasons available, but I've been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Nice.
And there's so many seasons, it's impossible to catch up, and I'm like, it's the perfect time. I've been watching a lot of competition shows. So if you've seen Next in Fashion with Tan France on Netflix, dude, binge through the entire thing in a couple days.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've been, I don't know why, like, competition shows has been so thrilling recently, just because, like, I don't know. I think I just like seeing people still be able to do what they want to do and not see people be like, I can't do it because COVID. So, like, I think that's been really encouraging, just to see people live out their dreams.
I never watch reality TV anymore. Yeah. But I watched a couple of clips from YouTube about the Big Brother Canada, and they were, like, getting updates regularly about the whole coronavirus outbreak. And and then, like, they finally shut it down recently. Like, just for the safety of everybody, we're going to make sure that you guys can go home and be with your families and stuff. It's like, I feel they were safer in the house, but all right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think it was more the people, the directors, the people working on the show, that they were like, we can't make these people keep coming to work.
I mean, how many people do you need? The switcher and the director? And
that's true.
What have you been watching, Alex? You said earlier, off camera.
Tiger King. I watched the new season of Better Call Saul in like a week. I'm not okay with this. It's really good. It's only like 7 episodes. Mm. Community just went up on Netflix.
I saw that. I need to watch it.
Yeah, it was on Hulu forever.
Oh, and we watched that horror documentary, the Eli Roth one on Shudder.
Yeah, Eli Roth's History of Horror. If you don't have Shudder, people, if you put in the code SHUDIN, I believe you get 30 days for free, right?
All caps.
All caps. SHUDIN. They've got a plethora of horror titles from the 80s, all this weird cult shit. We watched Tammy and the T-Rex from the, late 90s, I believe? Paul Walker.
94.
What a time to be alive.
Oof. For Paul Walker?
No, the movie to watch. Oh, no. I'm glad I watched it.
I know. That movie needs more attention.
It does.
But, I mean, they just put up the Friday the 13th movies, too. So if you haven't seen those, like, there's just a bunch of stuff that you would never see on a streaming service otherwise.
Right. That Shudder exclusive, Daniel Isn't Real. We checked that out.
Yep.
Ooh, if you haven't seen The Host, the older Bong Joon-ho movie, I think it's on Shudder.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
But yeah, this has been fun to kind of discuss the pros and cons of all of this. And kill an hour or so for ourselves, very selfishly. I don't know what's going to happen with this show. Just, this is a fun one-off. We might do more. But keep posted. I'm not going to use the Twitter account. I don't think I have... I forget the password. I could probably... I think I have it. Honestly, I think I have it, but... I don't know. We'll see. I don't even know how many people are still subscribed on iTunes, so if I post it in that feed, it might hit like 20 people, but it'd be fun to share on our social media. And
we keep getting new likes on Facebook. I keep getting notifications.
Yep,
I do too.
There's some fun comments I had read. Somebody was like saying like we were like shitty people or something.
Oh, that's fun.
It's so mean.
But that's why it's fun. It like It's Always Sunny. All of them are shitty people.
I mean,
you know.
It was a clever jab, and I appreciated it, because why not? So if you're listening out there, thanks. But yeah, this has been Not Quite Hollywood, episode COVID-19. Right? I had to. I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Brandon.
And good luck during this undetermined amount of time.
Stay safe. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Stay inside.
Wash your hands. Wash your nuts. Yes. My mom always told me, dude.
She did?
No.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.